Tell me more about this key.
Oh, it's not an ordinary key. It's a jewel.
A jewel?
Yes. The heart of Arima.
Well, can it be won?
Only by me. No one else dare touch it.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Holy moly, we are back for another fantastic episode of Dragonreel, the fantasy film podcast. I'm your host, Chris, and I'll go back to juggling apples. In chair number two, if she sees a man, she'll grab him and take him. It's Sharon.
I will. I'm just going to grab him and take him. Yep.
I said that already.
Yes, that's what I'm going to do.
All right.
Or I'll wait with the horses.
Or you'll wait with the horses.
Maybe.
Good. Somebody's got to.
Yeah.
Unless we need you.
Yeah, but I'll just be waiting with the horses.
He tread the jeweled thrones of the earth under his sandaled feet. It's Pete. I didn't mean that to rhyme.
And then you know, my crown rests upon a troubled brow. So, you know, there are good times in their bed.
Well, if you could get a better brow, I'd look into that.
Where do you buy your sandals?
Where do you get your brow?
The same shop.
His what?
It's the Brow Sandal Shop.
Brow.
Brows and Sandals. That was a band
Brows
I was
and
in.
Yeah, that was my
Guns N' Roses cover band in college.
Oh. That's right, because your first album, Leather Strap, came out at the same time that I was graduating from.
All right. Hey, we got another guest. It's chair number four. It's my cousin's sister's brother, acclaimed author, Bill. Oh, no, we're going with William. William Ray, also known as Bill.
It's cousin's sister's brother.
That's what I said. Cousin's sister's brother.
Wasn't it sister's brother's cousin?
No.
Cousin's sister's brother. But they didn't know about the bars, though, because there were bars.
Yeah, the bars
so
weren't there.
So that Conan could flex his massive muscles.
This is episode 29. We're almost to the big 3-0. And we are going to talk about the 1984 Arnold Schwarzenegger joint, Conan the Destroyer. Also known as Conan the Cinematic Mistake.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, you snapped that.
Shots fired. I'm laying it out there.
Shots fired. Javierly. Shots fired.
Across the bow.
and this was Bill's pick. And as special guest, we humored him. Enough to watch Conan the Destroyer.
It was very D&D-ish.
So, Bill, why don't you tell us a little bit about this movie, since it was your pick?
It's my pick for exactly the reason Sharon just said.
Uh-huh.
It was D&D-ish. It is the most D&D-ish D&D movie I think there is out there. You've got the opening is the characters are just sort of rumbling about wherever they are, and they all get pulled in by this queen who has a mission for them. And she needs them to go through this ridiculously complicated setup to go pick up a horn for a statue. And so they go and they fight a wizard and they fight some evil priests and they put the horn on the statue and lo and behold, it, you know, is Andre the Giant and they fight Andre the Giant and then like,
it's Andre the Giant in a giant bug-like penis suit.
Wait, was that the thing with the mirrors?
Lovecraft monster.
Was that the one with the mirrors? Yes.
No, this is at the end is Andre the Giant. But yeah, it had, you know, wizards, it had
magic.
castles. Yeah, crazy magic traps and dungeons that they were crawling through and trapped.
It had a bird made out of smoke.
So there were monsters. It had everything a good D&D adventure has. It felt like a module in movie form, and that's why I think it was perfect for the podcast.
So why was it so bad then? I'm sorry.
Because they wanted to make it family friendly. The studio wanted to make it family friendly, so they took out a lot of the edginess of the first one and threw in a lot more wah-wah type comedy and a lot less sex scenes.
Well, and it is right before they got PG-13 as a potential ratings category, so their only options were to aim for PG or R.
Oh,
and, well, I don't know if you remember, but PG used to be a lot racier than PG-13 is now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and what was with all the punching of the horses, man? I mean, what was...
Oh, that wasn't a euphemism. Sorry.
No. Like, he kept punching... touching animals in this. And Chris was describing it to me, and I'm like, oh, did it hurt the horse?
So
like,
in,
I didn't get it.
The European version of this movie, they took out the scene where he punches the camel, but they left in the scene where he apologizes to the camel.
Interesting.
So I don't know.
Did they leave the scene where the camel spits all over him?
Yeah, yeah, because that's when he apologizes.
Right, right, and then he gets spat on, and then he clocks the camel.
Right, right,
right.
But he punched a horse,
which is quite frankly hilarious. I'm sorry.
No, it's not.
It is.
It is.
It's hilarious.
It's a freaking camel. You don't realize how awful those things are.
So I want you to take a look at this movie. I don't insist that you watch it again, but think about Schwarzenegger's comic ability in this movie, and then compare it to his comic ability in True Lies.
What about his comic ability in Junior?
I haven't seen Junior. I consider his ironic wit to be on full display in True Lies, and I think he really nails that one.
There is that.
And comparing it to this, it's like different people. It's like, who even is this guy?
He's still way, way better than he was in The Barbarian, though. In The Barbarian, there were moments where you could really tell he had no idea what he was saying. He was just repeating the lines phonetically. And in The Destroyer, you at least had some sense that he knew what the words meant.
He'd spent more time studying English in this movie.
I think so. And,
poor guy.
Yeah.
Poor Arnold. I feel sorry for him.
I thought it was, for what it was, like just the basic sword and sandals kind of movie, and particularly compared to a lot of the others, you know, of that era, it's a lot sharper. The humor bits, they emphasized a little more, I think, as part of that PG push. I know I saw that Sarah Douglas did who played the Evil Queen, did an interview where she talked about a bunch of scenes that were cut for pushing that PG-13. So apparently there was a scene where she like is slapping around Wilt Chamberlain's character, which seems entirely too fantastic. I mean, Sarah Douglas seems pretty tough.
She's clearly standing on something when she does so.
Right, she'd have to be.
Chamberlain.
Oh, in the law.
Apparently there's a scene where she seduces a statue. Right. I don't know how that works, but that's
seduces
there.
And
is it the statue of Dagoth? And does it
I don't
have a
charm? I don't know. She got like these like very brief little like it's a one paragraph interview that she did with People magazine. So it didn't say much. But the one she felt pained about. Oh, there's a virgin sacrifice. But then she really, really felt pained that she had apparently an incredibly raunchy sex scene with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and she was very upset that that.
Oh
didn't
right,
make
I heard about that one.
Of the film.
Was that sex scene?
When they're drinking to Dagoth at the beginning.
Yeah.
Oh. So, and that was taken out?
It was
out?
Supposed to follow that scene, yeah.
Would have made the movie so much better.
There's a lot of stuff that was taken out. If you read the graphic novel by Jerry Conway, you get to actually see what the original story was supposed to be.
And the trip, there were really no... The only incident on the trip was they added another... Oh, wait a minute. They added two people along the
Which case. Is fun, which I thought was also very D&D-ish, that Conan decides, if there's going to be magic, we need a wizard. And I only know one wizard, so let's go get him.
Yeah, but the part that I thought would have made it better is if they fought something on the way. I don't know.
They like fought cannibals?
As a group.
As a group? Okay.
Cannibals.
Okay. You're right, Pete. They did fight cannibals. You're right.
But it still sucked.
Yeah.
That's because there wasn't the gore factor.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was it the gore factor? I don't know.
So Conan is supposed to be... I mean, I'm not an authority on Conan. But there is... It's sort of like a combination of D&D and H.P. Lovecraft.
You
so
are.
Like the horror in Conan is supposed to be like elder
gods. I think you're going a little far abroad with the Lovecraft analogy. Mm. It's not quite these ancient beings of chaos. It's a bunch of older gods that existed prior to the rise of humans.
Right. So it's not complete madness, but it is powerful things that like not the kind of thing you normally fight in a D&D game.
Right.
except in
but a lot most of the books don't have him doing these extraordinary things. Most of the books have him doing fairly mundane things like fighting fighting a spirit that's summoned by a wizard to rip off a museum. You know, and things like that. Fighting Stygian priests who are summoning snakes to invade a capital city.
Well, the journey was supposed to be so dangerous. That's why, okay, I'm just saying, the queen hired Conan to protect her niece.
Jenna.
Right?
Jenna, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but as far as I saw, there was nothing dangerous on the way, so...
Well, the cannibals showed. We've established that.
But the cannibals...
Well, there's the cannibals, but also you've got to take into account that they had to face Tataman, who's a powerful sorcerer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they also had to face the guardians of the horn. You know, and those guys were legion. They kept coming out of, like, corners and hallways all over the place. I was how did these guys get over there?
But I thought she said, maybe I'm confused with the timing, because she said, as soon as she has the key, kill Conan.
No, as soon as she has the treasure, kill Conan.
Right. Oh, yeah, I thought, maybe I goofed it up. So it was as soon as she has
Was it the key?
I thought she said...
Well, you know what? I've got it right here, so why don't we listen?
Okay.
It's...
I thought she said when she has the key.
I called this file, oh yeah, also kill Conan.
One other thing, Bombarda. It is not wise to have the King of Thieves near the treasure. So when the key is in my niece's hand...
Yeah, the key.
I want your sword in Conan's heart.
Yeah, I was right.
You were right.
Hey.
Yes, you're very smart.
What do you know about that? So she said when he has the key, which means that he wouldn't have been alive to fight those dudes. So
no, because he still had to fight Tataman, which was
the evil wizard was the big part,
right?
And Conan survived that.
So
I guess they didn't expect the Guardians of the Horn to be so cantankerous.
Yeah. So why did she say once you have the key?
Or they thought that Bombata could take care of it.
Yeah.
Well, Bombata and his three buddies they didn't manage to kill Conan.
One of whom is, of course, Sven Oli.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Sven Oli is a good friend of Arnold Schwarzenegger's that he manages to plant in many of his movies.
Oh,
so.
And was also completely different guy in the previous Conan movie.
Right, he was one of Thulsa Doom's right hand men.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then he's also the head of security in The Running Man.
Oh wait, you mean the big Norwegian looking guy?
Yeah. In fact, he is a big Norwegian guy.
Oh, he is a big Norwegian guy. Okay.
His last name is Thorson.
Oh, yes, okay. Exactly. Well, there you go.
Sven Ole Thorson.
Okay. He looks like a Norwegian metal musician.
Yes. A really, really big Norwegian metal musician.
So I guess back in the 80s, bodybuilders were very popular. It was like
not much. It's just that Arnie had a couple of really tight friends that he liked to include in his movies. Kind of like the way that Jackie Chan brings his own stunt team.
Oh.
So this whole thing was predicated on a girl with a certain mark, and my niece happens to have this certain mark.
Is she? No, I don't want to ask. Never mind.
So here's the important thing here.
She's a virgin. It would have been really funny if she was.
That's what I was going to ask.
Is returned safely to the palace, both the treasure and her virginity intact.
And who are you going to trust with that? Wilt fucking Chamberlain.
Wilt Chamberlain, the guy who bedded 20,000 women in his lifetime?
Yeah.
20,000 women in his lifetime?
In real life or in the movie? I'm confused.
No, supposedly in real life he bedded something like 20,000 women.
Really?
Really. Supposedly.
Yeah, so...
Who gave that number?
He did.
I believe he did.
Will Chamberlain did.
Well, he could be lying. How
really?
How could you have time to do that? How many would you have to do a year?
Well, you have to kind of break it down to how many was he able to do roughly on average a night.
Right.
A night.
It came out to like 8 or 9 women a night, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
If that's
that
not
would
even...
certainly affect his game.
Okay, first of all...
I don't think so. I think that's the reason why he was so good at this.
What age would you have to start that at? Because you didn't start when you were
little.
He's around 15
or 16. Maybe he's got, you know.
Sharon, I think you're a little fixated on this.
No, I'm sorry. I guess because I'm trying to think about something interesting.
One of the stories that I find interesting is that, like, Will Chamberlain was super protective of Olivia Dabo, so.
Was that the young girl?
Yeah, that was the girl played Jenna.
Well, so, I did have Chris look it up. She was 15.
I was wrong about her. I had said that at this point in her career, she had already appeared nude on screen.
And she didn't?
You're thinking of her cousin Miriam.
No, I am thinking of her. It was her next film, which was the same year.
Which was what?
The same year?
The same year or the following year, but it was around the same time.
But what's the other one called?
Bolero.
What was the other? Oh, she was in Bolero?
She was in Bolero, and at the age of 14 or 15, she appeared in full frontal nudity.
Oh, wow.
Also released in 1984.
And then she went on to be the sister in the Wonder Years.
That's what I remember her from, the sister in the Wonder Years. No, yeah. I also remember her from this movie, and I remember when this movie came out, and I was so in love with her.
Oh, you were?
Oh, yeah. She was so
I don't blame you. She was hot.
But I also want to point out that she was a full year older than me. So it wasn't creepy then.
But did they have her dressed modestly?
Well, no, they always had deep cleavage.
In the movie?
Yeah. No, they did not dress her modestly in the movie.
They didn't.
It's a Conan movie. There's never going to be somebody dressed modestly.
That's weird, though, to have a 15-year-old girl kind of dressed.
Where else are they going to find a virgin?
I'm just saying that. I mean,
I also would like to bring up that we haven't even once touched on the unsung hero of this entire film, Grace Jones.
she said she'd give her life for Conan.
Who's amazing. Well, apparently she wasn't going to be outdone by anybody, so to kind of throw dirt in Will Chamberlain's face, which, you know, requires a ladder.
Yeah, really.
She would work out with Arnie every morning doing his entire workout routine.
Oh, really?
Yes, with lesser weights, of course, but still, that's how she stayed so buff.
Okay, well, I also want to point. Buff. Yeah, I also want to point out Bob the Goon shows up again in our second Dragon Rail movie.
Absolutely, the incomparable Tracy Walter.
Yeah.
Oh yes, a classic.
And apparently, he was a last minute replacement.
Yeah, David Lander Squiggy was supposed to be Moloch.
Can
Squiggy
you imagine?
Really?
Yes. Hello, Levine. Hello, Shoyle.
Oh my gosh. For real?
For real.
Somebody's got to watch the horses. Oh, they need me.
Hello, Conan. Hello, Bumbaka. What are we doing today?
Yeah, it is, though, one aspect of the film which is really impressive is the cast themselves. I mean, you've got Schwarzenegger and Wilt Chamberlain, Grace Jones, Sarah Douglas, Mako, you know, who, of course, is the legendary Uncle Iroh. Mm-hmm. Then on top of that, Andre the Giant in disguise is, you know, there in the background. So it was an impressive group of performers called in to do like what was basically a cheesy, you know, sword and sandals play. Mm-hmm. So that's why for me, this race is possibly the best D&D movie. D&D movies didn't come anywhere close to this.
Oh, no.
You're really, really calling up a really low bar there.
Yeah, I know, but...
but still.
So you pick podcasts.
I do see what you're saying about the elements. There's definitely truth to the elements of the movie. Is definitely like a D&D game, which I love. And I can't say I love this movie, but I wish I could feel why.
Like none of the characters are really, none of them really feel real.
Oh, you see, that's why I focus on Grace Jones, because I think she throws herself so deep into her character.
The women were the best. I do have to say that.
She's just so wonderful. And I like the fact that she's the one, you know, of all of them, she's the one who's afraid of the mouse, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. And the look of, like, I'm so pissed with myself when she steps after everybody after she gives the shrug.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And Sarah Douglas
is just a phenomenal villain.
Right.
Oh, yeah, she always is.
Yeah, I liked her, too.
The thing about Sarah Douglas is she knows when she's in a cheese fest And she she brings the brie.
She's like, I don't fucking care. I'm doing this, and I'm really going to be fantastic in this role. It doesn't
matter. Know what Sarah Douglas does the best, better than anything else? Mm. She does the eye flare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She'll sit there and she says something, and she has this one moment where her eyes just get wider and then immediately narrow. So when they come riding back into the court chamber, and the horn is with him, she does the eye flare and goes, "Bring it to me."
Yeah.
And then does the big swish around and then walks briefly off.
Mm. Yeah, I couldn't see that. So, but thank you, Pete.
No, I'm sorry.
Shut up.
So my favorite part of the movie was... Oh, look, can we talk about favorite parts now, or are we still talking
about...
Let's talk favorite parts.
We can talk about favorite parts.
My favorite part of the movie was the Dagoth monster.
Mm. Okay.
I thought the costume looked really cool. I thought the webbed arms looked really...
fun.
Horrific and dangerous. So my favorite part was the appearance of the monster, not the scene with the monster, because that was just a bunch of grunting.
Hmm. Yeah. Tell them how many parts were silent in this.
Oh, again. My God. There was like 20 minutes of no dialogue whatsoever.
Better than a completely silent movie. So, we should have a whole list of movies that are not great for blind people.
Like Princess Mononoke?
That one wasn't bad for me. I don't know why.
Big Trouble, there was not a lot of dialogue, and I spent the whole movie talking and describing to Sharon what was going on.
Oh, right.
And in this one, there was not a lot of talking, and I spent the whole movie going, they're riding. They're still riding.
They're still riding.
Still riding.
They're riding across planes. They're riding across
planes. It's a good thing we can't be Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
Well, I have a favorite.
It's a big sweeping landscape of sand. It's still a big sweeping landscape of sand.
More sand.
So I
it's
can
coarse
tell you,
and gets in everything.
I can tell you what talking scene I liked, if you guys want to hear it.
Please do.
Sure.
I like romance. I think I've said that before on other podcasts. Uh-huh. And I very much liked when the virgin, I can't remember her name. I know
Jenna.
You said it a second ago.
Jenna.
I'm sorry. It's so bad that I know you guys think she's so hot, but, but when she was asking the older lady how you get a man,
she was asking Azula.
Yeah. How you get a man. Mm-hmm. And do you have that?
I actually don't. I have.
You're kidding me.
I have when she goes to the other guy.
Okay, well, do the other guy.
Okay,
that's funny too. What she
yeah,
has,
I like
she
that whole.
In order for a man to really know a woman, and for her to know him, they have to join.
Join.
She has no idea.
No idea. And so I love that. That whole bit, like how you get a man, and the scene with the thief, that part I really liked. I thought it was really adorable, and
also Tracy Walters' lines seemed badly dubbed.
Oh, they did.
Oh, they really did. The ADR and that was terrible.
Yeah, it was like there was like a complete mistake with the ADR, and it was just not. It didn't feel like he was saying that at that point.
I just liked the scene.
Yeah.
That.
So Bill, what's your favorite scene or favorite part?
My favorite part is I think I've talked to you about this before. Is the wizard fight between Akiro and the priest who's guarding the horn?
Okay.
They have this great moment where they come in and like the wizard's like okay and he starts raising the mouthpiece and that the gate that's keeping them apart and while everyone else is trying to run away.
Yeah, it's
and
all
I
mental.
Love that because yeah, well I love that because it's a moment that I feel like D&D really misses out on because you just have wizards throwing hand grenades at each other. And there's this great bit where it's like this everything comes down to this contest of wills and the two wizards are there squaring it off. And
yes.
Absolutely nothing results from that. Like it's just the two of them grunting.
Oh, no. My favorite move on Akira's part happens then.
Well, except the best part about that is like that was epic. The fact that he got that nothing to happen was huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was epic. I mean, really, in the story,
But the fact that he blinds the other guy thought that was great. It's like, nobody's winning, nobody's winning, nobody's winning. Take that.
Yeah, just pokes him in the eyes. You know,
up yours.
It's a great moment of, you know, like, because each character has their sort of focus moment where they're doing the thing that, you know, that character does. There's the thief moment, and there's the, you know, bashing stuff for Mbatha and lifting the gates and bending the bars and all that good stuff. And so the great sort of wizard showdown was fantastic, even though it didn't result in a giant, like, fireball. It was a good moment of much more subtle use of magical interaction. And I feel like, as a D&D movie, it's one of those, it's a great moment that you don't actually get in D&D. And so
yeah, I see what you mean.
I always point back at that and I go, that's a great bit. Like, it's, it's something that's using the character and using the focus of that character. It's their big moment to shine, and there's no actual fireball. It's an interaction. And I really always liked that aspect of it.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we should put that, you know, the next one of us, the GM, should put something like
just run
that
this game
in our game.
Exactly. What was your favorite part?
My favorite part is anytime Grace Jones had to fight somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I thought that was wonderful, especially that one point where she, like, stabs this one guy and she gives this look like, ha ha, blood.
Yeah.
So apparently she has so much fun with that. I can't help but have fun with her.
I think she had too much fun because apparently she actually hurt some stuntmen in her fight
scenes.
Because
in the movie she had most of her stunts and she'd never done stunts before. So that's mostly Richard Fleischer's part. That's not her fault. Good director doesn't let a novice in with the big stick. That's just rule number one of fight choreography.
I guess her smile when Conan cut the cord that was binding her was pretty rewarding.
It was very.
Yeah.
And when she spits, you know. Here's to your cruddy, muddy little village. Puh.
The leader of the cult of protecting the horn, I would have sworn, was Christopher Lee.
Really?
He did look a lot like him.
It wasn't. Huh. It was a guy named Ferdy Main.
I actually didn't see it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I do have to say one plus. Girl power, because at the end, when she becomes the queen, she says, well, why not a female captain of the guard? And
why do we have to make the distinction?
Plus she looked great. Grace Jones had those two plumes coming off the back of her 84. Little dress there and everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that part, and I think you have to remember that in this was in 84. Uh-huh. So I think
84 of so many great movies came out in 1984, and also this one.
I'm only talking about this part where she says, "Why not a female captain of the guard?" Which you don't see in a lot of books. And you just don't. Let's just be honest.
It also raises the question of where was Zula keeping that dress uniform this whole time?
Oh, good.
You like to know.
Good.
In her saddlebags, obviously, duh. Good, why did Conan have the double-ended battle axe on his saddle the whole time and never use it?
He never used it?
Yeah. He only ever used his lynching sword. Okay, if I'd known that.
Right.
Now I understand why they had such great bonfires.
See? All those campfires? That's where that came from.
Oh, the campfire scene was just intolerable.
Wait, which campfire scene?
When he was, like, mixing up his words because he was
drunk. Lot on your knife?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. I didn't like that. I didn't know why did they
he
put
was
in
so
that
bad.
Scene.
Look, it's the promise I was kingdomed, okay? So bad.
Right.
I
didn't... That was the worst drunken act I've ever seen.
But that's my other favorite scene, is him going, I have to stand up now, and then falling on his face.
Pete, you are so funny. So what was that scene in there for? I'm sorry, why was that in there? What was it?
That was comedy.
Comedy?
Yeah.
Comedy. That was to appeal to the fact that this was supposed to be a family film.
Right.
Oh.
Because what's more family-friendly than drunken barbarians?
Okay.
So here's a couple of my favorite lines of dialogue here. I'll just play them in order.
Akihiro, where is she?
There. That's one.
How do we get in? Is there another entrance?
Here's the other one. Right. Those are my favorite lines.
Chris, did you have to lay awake last night thinking of these lines?
No, they just came to me in a flash.
It's just right there.
Yeah.
So next time you play a wizard, are you going to make...
I'm just going to go... I might do it more like Tina Belcher. You
and
know,
like make the crunchy face. Squish up your face.
So this movie did well in the box office, relatively speaking.
Well, it had a lot of famous people in it.
It made like $100 million worldwide, didn't it?
I don't know about worldwide, but domestic it was $31 million on an $18 million budget, which is, at that point was doing well.
Yeah, because you figure in $5 million for advertising, that sort of thing. So
yeah. So I don't have worldwide figures. Critically did not do well. On Rotten Tomatoes.
What did they say?
It's got a 26% freshness rating.
Well, it's only got 5.9 stars on IMDb.
Yeah. That's a high rating, I think. the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 38%, so that's pretty low also.
Sigh.
So although it seemed to have been popular at the time, it has not aged well, and people do not look back on it fondly.
Well,
I disagree. That's why it's got a 5.9.
I do, yeah.
Bill
and
does.
I do as well.
And Pete, there you go. Pete does.
The only reason I do is for Grace Jones. I think she's wonderfully over the top in the whole thing. But it makes me happy.
I really want to know what Pete's going to
rate. Well, fine magician
this.
You are.
I'll go back to juggling apples.
is it time?
So did we get everything that was going on in the plot up front, and then the plot just happened according to what they were saying what was going to happen?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So we were pretty much given the setup in the first 10 minutes, and then we were given what we were promised.
Well, except sort of. Yeah, except Conan didn't know that she was going to kill him. So that was the twist.
Well, he suspected, but...
Yeah, but nothing was really a surprise for the viewer in this movie, either.
Especially since, we know that Sandel Bergman wasn't in the movie, outside of that one, blazing scene there, so...
So we pretty much, just kind of wandered along in footsteps that it said it was going to wander along in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're ready to rate this.
Think so? This might be our shortest review yet.
I mean, do you have more to add about it? I mean, this is. Like,
I mean, there are some beautiful places, beautiful shots of Mexico, and it was shot at almost the exact same time as Dune was. So,
I think of all the movies that we've done,
it's got a great soundtrack.
I did like the music.
I like the music sometimes.
I did like the music.
Sometimes it was a little more bombastic than it needed to be.
So Chris,
I disagree. I think it's just as bombastic as it needed to be.
Right. I don't think anything could have been too bombastic for this particular movie.
Especially since you had a guy named Bombata right in the movie.
Right.
So okay, I am really fascinated, and I want to know Pete's rating. So Pete, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how many would you give this one?
I'm going to give this a solid 3 for nostalgia and Grace Jones.
Okay. I thought you were going to rate it higher.
No, like I said, it's not. It's really not a great movie. It's just fun.
Okay, it's fun.
It's not one of those things that I would have, that I would spend money on the Blu-ray. I would just put it on, in the background while I was cleaning house or something. So
okay, all right. Chris Dudley?
Sharon Dudley.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, Chris, what would you give this movie?
Oh, boy. So there's a lot going on in this movie.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
There's not much going
but
on.
But Chris,
in this
you love D&D, so I think that should come.
So there
something.
Were a lot of lingering shots that were way longer than they needed to be. Like the cartoon dragon was, kind of lingering and a little bit too loving
it's a
for
bird
its own
of smoke.
Yes, bird of smoke.
I, I was imagining it much better as a blind person.
Yeah, oh,
you
yeah,
could imagine.
You kind of lucked
it's
out on that.
It's really cool.
I think there were a lot of lingering shots on Arnie shirtless in this one.
Chris told me that.
He
yeah.
couldn't get his shirt off fast enough. It was like
No, that was all Richard Fleischer. That was not. That was not me.
Okay. There should have been some sex in this movie.
I mean,
I think.
It was like kind of trying to tantalize you and tease you and get you kind of excited in a sort of juvenile, puerile, sexual, violent way. And then just didn't deliver on any of it with, you know, monsters that were mostly rubber masks. And so, I mean, I'm going to give this movie 2 gold pieces and 1 copper, which means it is slightly better than Excalibur.
What?
Only in your uninformed opinion.
I don't even know how you can do that in your brain.
The only reason why it gets
because
the copper...
Because clearly Sharon, his brain is full of like Swiss cheese.
No, he's
suffering from a bad case of toxoplasmosis.
He rated this higher in his mind than Excalibur. No, sir.
He just did that to egg you on. That's the only reason why.
I'm egged. I feel definitely egged on. Don't
fall for his petty tricks.
I know where he sleeps.
They're not worth it.
Oh, my gosh.
Bill, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate this movie?
I'm going to do a little better than Pete and give it, maybe 3.5, because it's not a great movie. It's a good movie, but the best part of it is, to me, as a fan of D&D, it is the D&D experience. It's... Yeah. If you just sat down and didn't have the players making Simpsons references everywhere and just were like in the game itself, that's basically what you would see is this movie. Is you'd have these like self-important, bombastic, ridiculous characters going off on some like half-baked nonsense mission to like do something that's maybe the end of the world, maybe not. And it has that great sort of high adventure nonsense feel to it, and there's so much fun to be had from that, and to see, you know, like Will Chamberlain makes a great like scary villain, somebody who dwarfs Arnold Schwarzenegger there being the heavy is pretty awesome. Oh, yeah. And of course Grace Jones is amazing in this movie. There's so many like little aspects of it that are delightful on their own. And the overall package is kind of flimsy, but I feel like there's enough there and of course the Basil Poulidoris music kicking in with the like. Exactly. Like Chris said, it's almost too bombastic, except that's not possible. And so it's just the right level of the top. And so
I think could we get more kettle drum in there?
Really?
Could we get a little bit more hoofbeats?
I need more.
No, no, that's it. They've tried. That's as many as will fit.
Right. The only prescription is what kettle drum.
Can we have a little nakedness, please? A little bit more.
If we get a little more nakedness in that film, it would have been a much better film.
I
agree.
I would have
given it at least a silver piece for a single breast.
Yeah, something should have been done to make. Okay, so somebody asked me.
So we got
me
Bill's
what,
rating.
Somebody asked me.
All right, Sharon. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Conan the Destroyer?
All right, well, first of all, much lower than Excalibur, because I love
lower than 2. Wow.
No, I think I gave Excalibur a 4.
A 5.
I gave it a 5.
Did I give it a 5? Yeah. Okay.
For some reason.
Because it's really good.
It's fantastic, and I've seen Excalibur.
Shot,
you can
together.
Watch Excalibur
it's
like
probably
30
the most
times.
Understandable adaptation of L'Amour Territoire.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so back to this one. All right. Now that I've heard Bill's descriptions, because Bill can pretty much sell, you know, ice to somebody in Alaska. No, but I agree with him that being a lover of D&D and of Arnold and of, I don't know, I did like the way the three main women played their parts. I kind of believed them. I guess Where it fell short for me was, the like you were saying, the plot. She basically told us the plot in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then nothing really was different from that. So
well,
I would have...
There were little things that came in, like getting a hero and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
there was nothing major.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was not M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah. So I might have liked to have... something fresher, something that I hadn't seen before, a different trick, if you will. So anyway, my rating is 2.8.
2.8? Wow.
Yeah. Because of the...
I can't believe I'm the low man on this.
You are.
Wow.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, Chris, this once again reinforces how inherently wrong you are about most things.
Wow.
It's also because, as we've all known, you hate D&D.
Right.
But see, he doesn't.
It's true. Deep down in his soul, he does. He plays it to punish us.
So I would rather watch
and himself.
I would rather watch this movie than the D&D movie. But I think, you know, as far as D&D movies go, we've done Mythica, and that was way better than this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought so.
Even with the propane tank, it was better.
Even with the propane tank.
Even with the propane tank.
Yes.
So.
Oh, I just realized something. I'm wrong. Zula is not the hero of the story. Akira is. He's the one who gets to narrate the Nemedian Chronicles.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
Clearly, he survives long after everybody else does.
Ah, okay. Well, that's true, because yeah. he might not. He might die and just be a narrating ghost.
No, come on now.
But as far as, like, acting roles to go out on, Uncle Iroh...
was the way to go.
Is the greatest swan song of any actor ever.
What is our next movie?
I believe you pick it.
Really? Sorry, come on.
Is it me?
It's you. Yes, Sharon, it's you.
All right, then I pick Harry Potter.
Which one?
I get all to pick them. Which one I want.
Yeah, we're not watching 8 movies.
Oh.
Why? We can just fast forward past the camping and the Quidditch, and we should have about 45 minutes worth of movie.
You know, why don't you pick my favorite one? It's the one where there's like a mystery that starts in the beginning, and then like their lives are slightly in danger, and then at the very end they figure out that Voldemort wants to kill Harry. Oh, also Harry wins at Quidditch.
Oh, and Gryffindor wins the House Cup.
And Gryffindor wins the House Cup. That's my favorite one.
Let's play. Let's watch that one.
Okay, so which one are we doing, Sharon?
I think that's 1 through 4, if I'm not mistaken.
All right, number one then.
All right, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
I'm done with that.
Is that okay?
Your copy might say the Sorcerer's Stone.
But that would be wrong.
That would be wrong. My copy says Philosopher's Stone.
I don't actually own a copy, so mine doesn't say anything.
I did cry in the last Harry Potter movie, though.
I don't think I've seen the last one.
I skipped the first part and watched the second part.
Okay.
Because I figured if I wanted to see a film about camping, by golly, I'd watch Deliverance.
So wait a minute. So you didn't see where... What's the house elf's name? I forgot his name. Dobby. So you didn't see where Dobby dies.
Spoilers, right?
Ew.
I'm just kidding. Everybody,
knows that Dobby dies. And yeah, I loved Dobby. I really did. I loved that character. Thought he was amazing.
All right, so that's our next movie.
Yeah, that's our next
Harry
one.
Harry Potter and the Philosopher's and or Sorcerer's Stone.
The Philosophical Sorcerer's Stone.
So, Bill, you want to come back for that one?
Oh, Harry Potter, I think I'll pass on that one.
All right.
Fair enough.
All righty, then.
Do I get to pass on that, too?
No, you're right.
Wait, I get to watch Conan. This is so unfair.
Fine.
All right, so who are we going to get to, you know?
Yeah. If you want to do Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's and or Philosopher's Stone... drop us a line. You can listen to the music at the end of the show and find our contact information. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, email us, go to our website, rate the movie, do all this wonderful stuff because we want to get in touch with you.
We want you
to get in touch with us. We would get in touch with you, but that would be really creepy. Yeah, wow. So that'll do it for us. And until next time, keep it real. Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon, and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.